All right, this is from Christianity Today, and it's an article about Queen Elizabeth II's faith or trust in God. So let's get started.
Queen Elizabeth II, the longest reigning monarch in British history, has died at the age of 96. Throughout the course of her unprecedented reign, Queen Elizabeth II spoke frequently about her personal Christian faith, delivering her first Christmas address in 1952, a tradition started by her grandfather, King George V. The Queen requested prayer for her upcoming coronation. "I want to ask you all, whatever your religion may be, to pray for me on that day," she said, "to pray that God may give me wisdom and strength to carry out the solemn promises I shall be making, and that I may faithfully serve him and you all the days of my life." As one of the world's most recognizable and celebrated leaders for more than seven decades after that Christmas, the Queen demonstrated how to keep one's Christian faith personal, private, inclusive, and compassionate while serving in a global public role under intense scrutiny from virtually every sector. Queen Elizabeth II...
Whoa. That's enough to talk about right there. Let's just stop for a moment. I'm struggling with Christianity Today writing this article in such a way that they're presenting that as a good thing.
And the reason I thought it would be good to talk about this is it seems like from people around her that she had faith.
Yep.
But yet it also seems like that she held back. And like you said, the article is promoting that she held back, that she kept it private, that it was inclusive. And I think we need to differentiate that those aren't necessarily positive elements of having faith. I applaud her for her faith, but yet she had an opportunity that I think she missed in moving her faith and helping others to see it more. And I thought that's why it would be good to talk about
this. I agree.
And she did from time to time.
She did from time to time talk about it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm just struggling with the way that paragraph is written.
Yeah, and what it is you have to understand. So, having seen the royal documentary on the Windsors as a family, things of that nature, when she was never supposed to be queen. Her father was supposed to never be king. Her uncle abdicated the throne to marry a divorced American woman. Her dad became king. She became the heir apparent to the throne. She didn't want it. Her education completely changed. Her life completely changed. She went from studying general topics and general knowledge that we would all have to an education exclusively on the laws of England. And that's how she was teased for being ignorant outside of the laws of England when she first took over the monarch and actually hired a tutor. Her husband was supposed to be the king of Greece before Greece was overthrown. There's a lot of things going on here. Her sister Margaret wanted to be queen, so she petitioned her father to have Margaret be the queen and not her as a teenage girl. And he explained to her that God had placed her. God's sovereign ordination had placed her in this position. So at that moment, from what we understand by testimony of those around her, is from that point she took it as a absolute solemn duty, but there was also this idea of holding the kingdom together, as in the kingdom of England. And she, in this time, she had England was still a power; it wasn't declining yet. They hadn't lost; they hadn't given freedom of commonwealth to like Canada and other places, and so she had this vast ecumenical realm that she had to appeal to hold the glory of England together, and she felt such a solemn duty to that she would make statements like this, But her last Christmas address last year, she sat down and it was on the death of her husband. And it was in the midst of COVID. And she said, many find your faith in your religions and everything else. For me, it is in Jesus Christ, the baby that was born centuries ago in a manger, who died on a cross for our sins. And she laid out the gospel. On her Christmas address. I think as she got older, she got more bold. Because, I mean, she's been reigning for 60 years. You know what I mean? Right. Things are secure. But I think starting out, she was probably scared.
I think there's, it reminds me a lot of Jimmy Carter as well, mm-hmm. who has this kind of personal faith, but has this political idea that, you know, it's personal and I'm not here to force it on anyone. That trope that we hear all the time. But the question then remains, you know, should a believer then be in a position of leadership if you're going to have to be forced into that kind of environment?
Should she have seen her platform as more
As you note, in England, you don't get to choose that.
Right.
You know, as they're taught and believe very strongly, God sovereignly chooses the sovereign.
Yeah, so...
All right, the next paragraph.
So Queen Elizabeth II inherited religious responsibilities as the defender of the faith and supreme governor of the Church of England. Titles vested in the reigning British monarch since Henry VIII renounced the papacy in 1534. At her coronation in 1953, Her Majesty took an oath to maintain and preserve inviolably the settlement of the Church of England and the doctrine, worship, discipline, and government thereof as by the law established in England. Her duties included appointing archbishops, bishops, and deans of the Church of England as advised by the Prime Minister. In 1970, she became the first sovereign to inaugurate and address the Church's General Synod in person, a practice she continued every 5 years after diocesan elections. 3 weeks after her coronation, the Queen followed historical precedent and swore to maintain the Church of Scotland, honoring her duty to preserve the settlement of the true Protestant religion as established by the laws made in Scotland. The Church of Scotland is Presbyterian and recognizes only Jesus Christ as King and Head of the Church, resulting in Her Majesty's lack of official title and participation as a regular member.
Good for the Church of England. I mean, Scotland. Good for the Church of Scotland. Mm-hmm.
Right? Yes. Yeah.
Because that other mess that we just read about is just ridiculous.
And it is just interesting that, going back to what you were saying, Jack, for her, you know, trying to hold the Kingdom of England together, she allowed them to not have her be in charge of the church. And so, you know, that's it. But yet she kept that, though, for the Church of England.
She should have commissioned her own Bible translation.
Huh. Well,
the QEV.
Well, you know, she did.
My grandmother would have bought it. Let me tell you.
She died in Ballymore. Which is in Scotland. Mm-hmm. That was her family heritage from her mother's side. So she has a Scottish heritage.
What's interesting about all of the history of a lot of this is on both sides, there's good men who want the truth, and then there's guys who are just opportunists who utilize the power of the church for their own gain.
Now, that defender of the faith predates so the reader just knows for history facts, the defender of the faith was given to Henry VIII by the Pope when he renounced Martin Luther in a written work. Mm. And he was proclaimed in 1518 defender of the faith, and then he took that and said, since I'm the defender of the faith and I know the Bible so well, I should be supreme governor of the Church of England.
Especially the parts about divorce.
Right. Yeah. So that just became the title that all, because Charles III will be that now.
So more than tradition, but the Queen's faith was more than a product of polite deference to historical tradition. Throughout her reign, she articulated the importance of her faith and recommended it to her subjects. So, you know, Pastor, you were commenting about the author of this article and the way it's written. So in our introductory section, he says it is private and inclusive faith. But now he's saying, now she's taking, you know, throughout her reign. So regularly, we could say, she articulated her faith and recommended it to her subjects. So it seems like he's not even sure which direction it was. So for me, the teachings of Christ and my own personal accountability before God provide a framework in which I try to lead my life, she said in 2000. I, like so many of you, have drawn great comfort in difficult times from Christ's words and example. In 2002, the Queen endured a painful year of personal losses with the death of her sister, Princess Margaret, and the Queen Mother. In her annual Christmas address that year, she spoke of how her faith had sustained her. I know just how much I rely on my own faith to guide me through the good times and the bad, she said. Each day is a new beginning. I know that the only way to live my life is to try to do what is right, to take the long view, and to give my best in all that the day brings, and to put my trust in God. The Queen consistently extended her influence to acknowledge and celebrate religious diversity and tolerance in the United Kingdom. Sounds like we're going back the other direction again. The Commonwealth of Nations and throughout the world. Her Majesty's Christmas and Commonwealth Day messages often address the theme of interfaith harmony and respectful tolerance. Leaders of various faiths and denominations regularly attended royal ceremonies, including weddings and services of thanksgiving, at the invitation of the Queen and her husband, the Duke of Edinburgh.
What's kind of difficult to know is what we mean by leaders of various faiths. Are we talking about Hindu, Buddhist, Judaism, Islam? Is that what we're talking about? Or are we talking about within the Protestant umbrella, Lutherans, Catholics? I mean,
you would be talking about what you described first. Mm-hmm. Because they would be the national leaders within the Commonwealth of England, of the United Kingdom.
Right. So how did she reconcile that? Was that political?
Well, that's the question, you know, that I think the driving force behind asking all these questions is how does a woman who is the reigning monarch completely ostracize herself from a portion of which she's been entrusted to rule and reign over? And, I mean, how do you walk that line between, I am your queen, I am the political head, and I have a responsibility to you as my citizen, but yet your faith is not mine, and I would encourage my faith to you as I try to live it out and I have found help from it.
Right, which is where we got this crazy personal, private, inclusive, and compassionate. Four words strung together to somehow try to describe what the dance she's doing.
Yeah, and make no mistake, this is a modern idea because, you know, even 200, 250, 300 years ago, that's not the way the world worked. You didn't try to capitulate to all sides. You stood your ground for England and let everybody else, you know, we're going to get into a war about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would dare say, even if you just go back to her father, the inclusivity and the tolerance at that point in time in the 30s, it would not have been mm-hmm. what you just said as far as Hindu, Buddhist, mm-hmm. all that. I think it would have been Lutheran, Protestant.
Just a couple of years ago, I read in England, the number one name boys were being given was Muhammad.
Yeah.
The number one name.
Yeah, the Muslim influence there is huge.
Right.
Yeah, and certainly now the word empire is a nasty word.
Sure.
Yeah. Whereas even 100 years ago, not so much. Yeah.
Celebrating her Diamond Jubilee in 2012, the Queen attended a multi-faith reception at Lambeth Palace, hosted by the Archbishop of Canterbury, featuring the leaders of eight faiths in the United Kingdom, including Buddhism, Judaism, Islam, and Hinduism. At this event, the Queen said, "Faith plays a key role in the identity of millions of people, providing not only a system of belief, but also a sense of belonging. It can act as a spur for social action. Indeed, religious groups have a proud track record of helping those in the greatest need, including the sick, elderly, lonely, and disadvantaged. They remind us of the responsibilities we have beyond ourselves."
The Queen. So that's the idea. Religion is good for society. Doesn't matter what religion.
And the word I hear a lot is my faith, 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 your faith. You know, it's this whole idea like, you know, the mountaintop. All you really need is faith, and you'll somehow get to God in the end. And, you know, I think part of the issue we have in America is we say the same kind of things. when you go to a football game and you got the John 3:16, that's great. But then you talk to somebody, and we even hear it in language in our government, faith-based organizations. And the reality is, it's not my faith that I'm depending on, because I can't hold myself. I'm depending on Christ to hold me. And I think that's a point that gets lost when we start talking about your faith, because we got the, my faith has carried me through, you know, it's...
Yeah, but you got to realize, this is a young woman, not so young now, that when, from a very early age, her sole instruction existed in English law, keeping England great, keeping the United Kingdom united, and upholding the honor and lineage. You know, they changed their name. She wasn't Elizabeth II or Elizabeth Windsor or Mountbatten. She went by Elizabeth Mountbatten in personal home relations. When she was the princess heir, she was Elizabeth Windsor, keeping the Windsor name because an act of parliament made her, which caused marital problems. And then when she took over, her prime minister told her, you are no longer Elizabeth Windsor. Every time you step in public, you are Elizabeth Regina. That means the sovereign, the reigning. And you are the only one that bears that last name. I mean, so, you know, in that aspect, and you got to remember, her first prime minister stayed prime minister for a very long time because he was a hero of World War II. He was the sovereign prime minister of England, so to speak, because of what he did through World War II with her father, Churchill. And Churchill would have taught her kingdom above everything. And so she's holding her father's legacy of being the monarch family that held England together from German defeat. That always had to, so one, I'm sure one of her greatest fears was the kingdom splintering. So I can understand where she would capitulate. I don't agree with it, but why she would capitulate when they put together a thing for her and she feels a social, political responsibility, and you don't want to go in and offend the host.
Right,
so to speak.
I understand, you know, how she would have to walk on eggshells, but let's just point out that when you stand in public and you say something you don't believe,
I know
that's not integrity.
Well, I don't think she said anything there in that quote that
she
didn't
believe.
Yeah, you know, that might be, and that's the workaround, because if you say, hey, I know a lot of people find comfort in your faith, you haven't said a mistruth.
Correct.
Right. Because
even because
so yeah, I get
believe
it.
In
walking
wrong
on eggshells.
Faith.
So you know, I'll retract that a little bit about being, you know, no integrity. But I'm just saying it's probably she has to swallow hard in order to say something like that or hold her nose. And, you know, kind of personally.
And I think I think the most times that she was personally pointed with her own personal faith is when she delivered a Christmas address, because she's the initiator. She didn't call the meeting. She wasn't invited to the meeting. It's her personal time to come forward, and in those, she always pointed back to Christ.
And so that's my takeaway and challenge for myself from the article is, when we use the word tolerance, we use it, I think, in the right perspective, where tolerance means that we allow them to have a different belief, but we're never going to say that their belief is right in any way.
Or lend any credence or implication of.
Yes. And so I need to always figure out where my line is as far as where is that tolerance, where how far will it go? And to be a good witness and light in a dark world, I need to stand on the truth, but yet I need to make sure that I'm not offensive and that the Word of God and God is doing the offending on that. And so I think we just need to make sure that we're looking to see, are we actually concerned about that, and are we even looking at where our line is?
The Queen's efforts were recognized in 2007 by the Three Faiths Forum, an organization dedicated to the building, understanding, and lasting relationships between people of all faiths and beliefs. It presented Her Majesty with the Sternberg Interfaith Gold Medallion, awarded to individuals who have helped promote peace and tolerance among people of different faiths. Heir presumptive. Born on April 21st, 1926, Elizabeth Alexandra Mary Windsor was the firstborn of the Duke and Duchess of York and the first grandchild to the reigning monarch, King George V, who reportedly delighted in the thoughtful, well-behaved child known by family as Lilibet. Family, Elizabeth's father, acceded to the throne in 1936 as King George VI when his brother, King Edward VIII, abdicated in order to marry a divorcee, Wallace Simpson. As the heir presumptive, Elizabeth was tutored privately and served in the Auxiliary Territorial Service during World War II. In 1947, she married Philip Mountbatten of Greek and Danish royal lineage. Their union lasted 73 years until his death in 2021, and produced four children: Charles, Prince of Wales and heir apparent; Anne, Princess Royal; Andrew, Duke of York; and Edward, Earl of Wessex. In addition to her children, the Queen is survived by 8 grandchildren and 12 great-grandchildren. From the beginning of her reign, the Queen consistently cited references from Scripture, particularly in her annual Christmas broadcast. "To what greater inspiration and counsel can we turn," she asked, "than to the imperishable truth to be found in this treasured house, the Bible?" In her
what a mixed message, man. We're just so confused.
It does seem like, I mean, obviously we don't,
like all over
none
the
of
map.
Us know this woman, right. But it does seem like, you know, like Jack kind of pointed out, is when she was the initiator, she had the floor. She used her platform to reveal her faith and what it was she believed in, as opposed to offending the guest or the initiator of another event, in which she was may have been a guest of honor, but still was not the host. So in her 2016 address, Her Majesty explained, "Billions of people now follow Christ's teaching and find him in the guiding light as the guiding light for their lives. I am one of them because Christ's example helps me see the value in doing small things with great love, whoever does them in whatever they themselves believe." Her friend and confidant, Billy Graham, attested to the Queen's love for the Bible as well as the strength and depth of her faith in his autobiography, Just As I Am. "No one in Britain has been more cordial toward us than Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II," Graham wrote. "Almost every occasion I have been with her has been in warm, informal settings, such as a luncheon or dinner, either alone or with a few family members or other close friends. They rarely publicized their meetings or leveraged their relationship professionally, but the two enjoyed a friendship that endured for more than 60 years until Graham's passing in 2018. He wrote, "I always found her very interested in the Bible and its message." The Queen's love for the Bible and its gospel message led to her participation in the publication of a special book to commemorate her 90th birthday, titled The Servant Queen and the King She Serves, co-authored by Catherine Butcher and Mark Green. This overview of Her Majesty's Christian faith was published by Bible Society UK, for whom the Queen serves as patron, along with Hope and the London Institute for Contemporary Christianity. Her Majesty personally wrote the foreword, thanking readers for their prayers and good wishes. "I have been, and remain, very grateful to God for his steadfast love. I have indeed seen his faithfulness," she wrote. The book was distributed to thousands of churches across the UK and throughout many Commonwealth countries prior to the Queen's birthday in 2016. The book proved so popular that the Bible Society had to print another 150,000 copies to meet the demand. Part princess and part pope, both guardian and great-grandmother, diplomat and disciple, Her Majesty the Queen was the calm that carried on, stabilizing her nation and the Commonwealth during tumultuous periods of historical change and technological advancement. "Ultimately, monarchy points beyond itself to the majesty of God," wrote Ian Bradley, professor at the University of St. Andrew's School of Divinity. "It encourages God-given human faculties of reverence, loyalty, and worship. It derives its true sanction and authority from above rather than from below." Queen Elizabeth II was such a monarch, bridging the 20th and 21st centuries, modernity and postmodernity. Her Majesty credited her personal faith in God and belief in Christ as her anchor amid the many storms, both public and private, that she endured. To the end, she fulfilled her sacred coronation vows to God, living faithfully and serving those entrusted to her care.
And then our author is a former English professor and the author of The Faith of Queen Elizabeth, if you want to read more about it. Well, I don't think that when King Charles dies that an article like this will be written.
No.
Definitely not.
I think some of the struggle that we were discussing, at least from my perspective, I think kind of comes to light and makes a little more sense when you see the relationship she had with Billy Graham. Because, like, as soon as the author made that connection, and I've seen a documentary on Billy Graham and kind of how his ministry had played out, that it seemed like toward the end he had gone a little more ecumenical. That while he may have had his own personal faith, he saw a platform for building community and unity among larger sections of different varying faiths outside of the true faith, and used it as a platform. So that makes at least a little more sense in my brain. I don't question whether, I mean, I don't know her. Only God knows whether or not she was truly trusting in the gospel, but it seems like she's left a legacy that says that she was a believer.
Yeah, and
within everybody's work.
Yeah,
I look at this article in her life from most people have a secular job. And what are the boundaries, what are the limits within your secular job to display your faith, and how are you approaching that? Are you aware of that? Are you, you know, trying to use what you can, but yet you're respectful of your job and your company? There's a balance there.
And I never respected chaplains when I was in the Army until I was standing there one day, and then we were setting up, and I happened to be close enough to the command platform. And I heard the commander say to the chaplain, "I want to read your prayer before you pray it. And I want to make sure that it's not too pointed Christian." And then I remember later having a discussion with a brigade chaplain and sitting in his office for well over an hour debating whether or not the exclusion of Christ-centered Christian Christmas hymns should be done in a Christmas caroling event for the sake of not offending those who don't believe. And he finally looked at me and said, "The colonel said." I mean, it was one of those where it was the commander that was driving this, and he has this rank issue. He has this job boundary issue. And, you know, not everybody's ready to stand against that.
Well, and there is also a sense in which, you know, I think everyone, maybe people don't enough, but, you know, God has called you to a particular thing. You don't necessarily always want to do that or like it.
Right.
You know, when I mean, we've all had jobs. Steve, I don't know about you. You've been here, so you probably can't say this, but you've all had jobs that, you know, you're working that job just to put food on the table. It's not because you go in every day and you just love it. But there is a
certain... He doesn't go in every day to love it here. I mean, so...
No, he
there's,
does.
There's, I see period, there's periods of it, probably.
I think we all enjoy working here. But my point is, like, you know, there's times when, you know, leading worship is what I've been called to do. It's not necessarily what I would find the most enjoyable thing to do. I mean, I do enjoy it, but I mean, I like to write books, teach, do whatever, but God keeps calling me and saying, "Nope, you can't do that. I haven't decided for you to do that right now." And so I think that in some sense, because I think about what life would she have led if she didn't have that responsibility and weight hanging on her, because if you watch anything like The Crown or other shows, you know, you can, that comes through, that that's just drummed into them, that, you know, you are for the kingdom first, and whatever you want is subservient to that. And I think, and I don't know how accurate it is, but I think it was The Crown where she came and she told her husband about Billy Graham, and I think that was probably the impetus. She probably was converted by watching Billy Graham or having some interaction with this American faith movement, even though, you know, we find a lot of big issues with it. I know plenty of people. My grandfather was saved under Billy Graham, you know, truly converted, and I don't know, but Brian, back then, if it was as ecumenical, because I think it was about 1952 when she probably was saved.
There's nothing ecumenical about Billy Graham in the 1950s.
No, not back then.
No, it's not till the end. As we were kind of talking about this balance between the job and your faith, Pastor, I'm thinking about Joseph as we're going through on Sunday mornings. I mean, you got a boy who's working in a prison, and it's like, how much of what he's doing as he's attending these prisoners, as he was an attendant in Potiphar's house, how much of what he was doing was just, I'm just going to do my job well.
Yeah, and think about this too, though. Put yourself, let's just even go to just the President of the United States for a moment. And I don't mean our current president, I'm just talking about the office itself. Or the monarch of England. Okay, we know that Islamic numbers are rising. We know that starting in the 1970s with the first hostage taking of airplanes, the hijackings of Pan Am and other planes, this is, you know, there's a lull between World War II and the 70s when radical Islam really began to raise its head again and began to have these terroristic ideologies surfacing, coming to the top and pushing in. By that time, the Islamic numbers were growing in countries all around the world, to include our own. So as a political leader, would you go up and alienate a group and push them towards radicalization, or would you talk about the milder positive aspects of how faith is supposed to help society? I mean, I'm just asking as a rhetorical question for contemplation.
Yeah, for the peace of the Commonwealth, you would promote an interfaith tendency if the Commonwealth and the prosperity of the Commonwealth was your priority.
Right.
We do the same, not with faith, but on a smaller scale, even within the church. And, you know, because we have people that have varying degrees of preferences and everything else. And, you know, I fall into, you know, going to events that I feel somewhat not comfortable with because of the, you know, I was invited and I feel like as one of the pastors, I'm expected to be there, but then it's how long do I stay? At what point do I leave? Because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to offend, but I also don't want to put myself in a position where I feel like I'm...
We don't want to see Steve doing the electric slide.
Yes, beginning to, you know, that I'm in sin either. So, you know, and the...
Actually,
yeah.
We do
want to
see that.
It goes on and on. I mean, it's very, very...
So, I mean, I know we're, it's not the United Kingdom of Great Britain, but, you know, on a smaller scale, we all face similar issues that she did.
Sure we do. Yeah. I mean, it'd be amazing and wonderful if she was born again. That would just be so cool, you know?
Another thing I told my wife. How come everybody's not writing articles about how I'm a Christian?
Right.
You know, because we got this idea of celebrity, like it matters more when it's somebody important. You know, we get all excited.
Have you all seen the picture of the day of her coronation versus the picture of her son's coronation this year as he's ascended? You all need to see if you can find the picture. But it's the exact, I don't know what the palace is, but it's the same build. It's not Buckingham Palace.
It's the church,
Westminster Abbey.
Yep.
The church itself is identical between the two. And but it's the background around and how much it changed between when she ascended the throne versus when her son.
Can you see a McDonald's in the background? Is that what it is? Taco Bell.
It's probably talking about the modern technology.
The way the city has been built up around that. It went from an old style city to now there are skyscrapers in the background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see what the future holds for England under this new king and what influence he'll have, if any. And I mean, is the Church of England apostate?
I think largely it probably is. I would say there probably are sections of it that may not be. because that's what we had found. I mean, we love the music of the City Light Church.
Yeah.
That is an Anglican church. It's a Church of England church.
There's some pockets. You know, the Gettys, who were so influential and definitely on the point of the gospel, are from the Anglican background.
Yeah.
Right, but the Anglican background derives its origin from the Church of England. It's an outcropping of it. Right, so, you know, I doubt that anybody in City in Life would say that the defender of their faith is the queen, or the head of the church is the queen or the king or whatever.
Yeah. No, they have bigger issues. You know, they live within a mile of that Hillsong church.
That's another podcast, guys.
Yeah. All right, thanks for listening to our Wednesday morning podcast. Y'all have a great day out there.